Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org and on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. Today is April 1st, 2026. The markets were up today with the Dow. I haven't had to say that in a while. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 46,565, the S&P at 6,575, and the NASDAQ at 21,840. Our topic tonight is, as was announced, final wishes and goodbyes, tips to help, topic people usually want to avoid, but it's a topic that at some point we cannot avoid. So why not just talk about it? So we are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking live, you can give your question to Cindy and they'll write it down and bring it in to me. Questions can also be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. So there is a lot to unpack here with this topic, final wishes and goodbyes, tips to help. And you may think I'm only going to talk about estate planning documents, but that's not all we're talking about tonight. And I do want to give credit to a client who brought up some interesting questions, having recently experienced a loss of a loved one. She had read an article in the New York Times as well, and it was referencing an author named Margareta Magnusson, who had written the book The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning. The article popped up because she had passed away in March 2026 at the age of 91. And in her 2018 book, she encourages you to get rid of unneeded, unwanted things and or pass off these treasures to others and share the story that goes with them. Have a throwaway box. I thought that was very clever. Have a throwaway box, things that you may enjoy while you're alive, but that when you die, your loved ones don't have to think about it at all. Just throw it away in the throwaway box. And then when you pass away, they go to the box. It's marked throwaway. They don't even have to look through it. They can just throw it all away. So hopefully that could be an inspiration. And I'm going to mention that book again in case anyone's interested in it, or that New York Times article where they had a little video where they were interviewing her. And that was quite inspirational as well. So The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning. And again, the author was Margareta Magnusson. So let's talk about being prepared before anything happens so that your loved ones can manage if and when something does happen. As this author had said in the interview that she was being done, she said, you know, why do you want to leave this for someone, this mess for someone else to take care of? And it isn't just things. It could also be your financial situation, your financial assets, your, you know, personal items, your last wishes for, you know, burial or funeral arrangements. Why leave that for someone else? And if you are someone who, you know, doesn't want to face these things, you're in denial about them, then, you know, maybe ask a friend to help you work through it, or ask a sibling or a parent or a child to help you kind of get through some of these steps. If if it makes you so anxious that you can't do it, ask someone else to help, and you'd be surprised maybe how empowering it might be. Regular listeners know that I quote my mother all the time on the show, and my mother always said we could be gone tomorrow. So I always like to say plan for tomorrow, but live for today. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things you can do while you're alive. Now, obviously, estate documents are, always a priority as far as I'm concerned. So do get your documents prepared. And the documents, when we say that, are typically a will, a last testament and will. I don't know if they even use that language anymore, last testament, but a will. Power of attorney, we usually say POA, power of attorney. Healthcare directives or healthcare power of attorney. And that's for the person, if you cannot speak for yourself, they can help make medical decisions for you if you cannot speak for yourself. A living will usually says if you want to be like resuscitated or not, do you want to be given water, do not resuscitate, those kinds of wishes. And make sure you let your representatives know where those important documents are, because sometimes lawyers will keep those documents for you. And if you move around, it might get lost in the shuffle of that the original documents might be with the attorney's office in, Ohio, and you're living in Pennsylvania now. So you want to make sure that you're buttoning up those types of outstanding items. Do you perhaps have the will in your own possession, any of these documents in your own possession? If you do, where are they? Are they in a safe deposit box? Are they in a fire safety box in your house? Are they in a drawer? I've heard about people putting them in the freezer. I haven't actually ever had anyone do that or have ever heard anybody actually doing that, but I've heard about that. So where are those documents? And you might know where those documents are, but if something happens to you, and this could be while you're alive, so I'm not talking about just when you pass away, I'm talking about when you're alive too. When we say final wishes and goodbyes, remember, we're still around if we haven't said goodbye yet. So you want to make sure that your personal representative, whether it's going to be an executor, that power of attorney, or that healthcare agent, if they know where the documents are located, very important. And if they are with an attorney, where is the attorney? Are you going to be able to get access to those documents? What if it's on a weekend? So typically what will happen, an attorney may keep the will, but what I generally see is an attorney give the principal, the person, their client, sometimes they give them like 5 copies, and that's so that they can give them out if needed. So you can give it to your agent to go take to the bank, or give it to your agent to take to the financial advisor to kind of show that you're appointed the power of attorney if it's necessary. Because that could happen at a time when the attorney's office may not be open, may not be around. If you have an illness, a tragic accident, or something on the weekend and you can't speak for yourself, you do want to make sure that you have access to that, or that your agent has access to that healthcare power of attorney if decisions have to be made. Okay, so make sure you know that not only you know where it is, but that your representatives also know. Very important. We also want to make sure that we have, trusted people around us in the event that something happens. Sometimes we have family that might not be around. Do we have friends? Do we have neighbors that may, be engaged to kind of like help keep an eye on each other, check in with each other, that type of thing? I'll talk more about that when I come back from this first break. If you have questions, and it can also be text questions, because I know it's April 1st and we're coming down to the deadline here. If you do have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know there are many ways you can support the programs you love on WDIY? You can make a gift of appreciated stock or mutual funds. A powerful way to give, and you may avoid capital gains taxes. If you're 70 and a half or older, you can also make a tax-smart gift directly from your IRA. And if you have a donor-advised fund, you can donate directly from the account and benefit from a more tax- and cost-efficient way of giving. To learn more, contact Seamus McGrogan at 610-694-8100, extension 3.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We're talking about final wishes and goodbyes, tips to help. So we started off mentioning documents. Make sure you have your documents in order, know where they are, and make sure your representatives know where they are. Now, the question that was brought up by my client that she had said, what if someone's alone? What if you live alone? Maybe you don't have, your parents are gone, you don't have children, you don't have a spouse. You know, what happens? And, you know, you sometimes wonder. That's where you hear those stories about the mailman or the utility person or someone coming by. But, you know, there's something to say about what I heard a term one time on a TV show called Nosy Neighbors. It's okay to have nosy neighbors sometimes if they help keep an eye out either on your property or keep an eye out for you. Maybe you have a pet, you know, that might alert someone that there could be something awry. So you kind of want to make sure that you are connecting with people, whether it is, you know, family, if you have family, or friends, or as I said, neighbors perhaps, but people that you trust. I've heard stories about someone making friends with the clerk at the drugstore. I mean, you know, I guess that could maybe work, but you really want to probably try to make sure that it's someone within your sphere that you know, that, you know, would know a little bit about your whereabouts, your habits, and could keep an eye on things. And why not let them know if you're traveling or not? You know, if you're not feeling well or you have health issues that concern you, and you're willing to share that, because maybe that would help if they don't see you for, you know, a week and they know you're gone, then that's okay. But if they know you're not traveling and they haven't seen you for a week, that would be like a little clue, a little alert for them to kind of check in, or maybe have an agreement with the neighborhood, you know, with the neighbors. Hey, you know, let's check on each other. We have had the same neighbors for a very long time, and we usually will tell each other, hey, we're going here, we're going there. They tell us they're going here, we're going there. We watch out for each other's packages. We watch out for each other's mail. Sometimes you might stop the mail. Sometimes you don't, because maybe you don't want anybody to know you're gone. But, you know, take those little extra steps. Now, let's say that perhaps you're home, perhaps you're not home. If someone has to come into your home, either to check to see if you're there, if there's something wrong, if they have to call, you know, emergency services to maybe check on you if they haven't heard from you or seen you in a while, do you have emergency contact information in the house that someone could readily access or see, whether you have it like stuck on the refrigerator somewhere, or as I've said before, my brother, every time he leaves his home, he leaves a whole pile on his bed for me, for my sister Lori, with all kinds of information, his financial information and, you know, access that I may need in the event anything happens to him. And the reason he's probably become so paranoid about that is because he had a friend who died, you know, of one of those, you know, widowmaker heart attacks. And it was kind of like, oh my gosh, all kinds, you know, of panic at that time. But his friend had given him all of that information, so he kind of knew, you know, what to do and what was happening and contacting the family members and et cetera. So have that emergency contact information available and somewhere, you know, that someone could find in the home, particularly if you live alone. It's not as difficult probably if you have family members, but this really is for people who may be living alone. And at some point, we may all be living alone as we age. And, you know, we lose spouses and our kids move away. Many of us do end up being alone. we might have an opportunity to move into, you know, a continuing care community, assisted living, an over 55 community. There's a lot of advantages to that, too. So that could be an option for people as well. So have that emergency contact. I would think that if most of us are walking around with phones, smartphones, that we have an emergency contact perhaps in our phone. Frankly, when I saw this to say, you know, put an emergency contact in your phone, I thought, well, is it flagged that way? I don't know. But if someone could open my phone, they could just go to Siebert and, you know, scroll through all the Sieberts. There's lots of them in my phone. You know, they might not know my maiden name, but, you know, there would be emergency contacts in there, or at least descriptions like mom. I have my mom. My mother is still with us, and she would be in there. So pay attention to that. What about our financial information? So as we age, we could become more prone to fraud or scams. It could just be, you know, par for the course that as we get older, we might not have the, you know, the greatest of memories as we used to. We might be lonely. We might like when people call and, you know, talk to us and say they're going to help us with our computer and, you know, protect our assets and all of those things. You have to be very, very careful in this day and age for fraud and scams, whether it's coming through on your telephone as a text message, as an email, as a phone call, or potentially even the mail. But we usually are seeing most of these, the fraud and scams coming through either the phone or your computer email. My mother has like a little flip phone that she just uses when she's away from home. And she gets multiple calls every single day with people saying they're going to help her get out of debt and pay her real estate taxes and you know, all kinds of things. And of course, my mother has no debt whatsoever. So it's just all scams. But be careful of that. So there's something called a trusted contact that most financial firms, when you open up an account, at least when you're 65 or over, because from FINRA, they have recommended that financial advisors request or ask people if they would like to have a trusted contact. And this was from FINRA.org, the Securities and Exchange Commission's Office of Investor Education and Advocacy, FINRA, and the North American Securities Administrators Association. They're issuing investor bulletins to urge investors to consider adding a trusted contact person to their brokerage account. So if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and reference that article for a little bit because this could be really important, and I'll tell you why it's important. We've had this happen even at our firm where we get an alert either from our custodian or we see something that just doesn't seem right. If we can reach the client, that's always the first thing we do. Reach the client, say, is this valid? Is this legitimate? Are you sure that, you know, and we have to dig a little bit sometimes to make sure, yes, it's valid. We want to talk to them in person. But if we can't reach that client, if that client thinks, you know, someone has told them don't talk to anybody and they may not, you know, feel they can talk to anyone, is there a trusted contact that we could reach to say, hey, could you go check on grandma? Because we're concerned that she could be a victim of a scam or a victim of fraud, or, you know, we haven't heard from her. We normally hear from her. I had a client that I used to talk with on the phone all the time. He had lost his wife. He was very lonely. He would call, we would talk, and then I hadn't heard from him for a while. And so that raises kind of flags and alerts. So you want to be careful. You want to be able to have a trusted contact that if that financial advisor sees something suspicious, that they can call them. And it doesn't mean they're giving away your financial information. It just means they can call and say, hey, could you go check on someone? It doesn't mean they're giving away your financial information. There's a big difference between like a power of attorney and a trusted contact person. Because again, sometimes you might not have any family around. So that trusted contact could be the neighbor for all we know. I'll talk more about that when we come back from our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Sieber. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Bob and Cindy and they'll bring it in. We're talking about final wishes and goodbyes, tips to help. And, you know, you might think, well, Lori, what does this trusted contact have to do with final wishes and goodbyes? Well, if we are experiencing perhaps some mental incapacity, it could be later in life. We want to make sure that our assets could still be taken care of, that our needs are still taken care of, that our final wishes can still be taken care of. So it kind of all falls within this realm of kind of buttoning up these little things as we age or get older. But this isn't just for people who are aged. I mean, we can go at any age. So, you know, it's always important to have this information no matter what age we are. So going back to trusted contact person, though, the SEC and FINRA and the NASAA came out with this concept years ago to add a trusted contact person to brokerage accounts in particular to help with investment professionals in case they're having trouble reaching the client, that they can reach out to this trusted contact. It says naming someone as a trusted contact does not give that person any authority to act on your behalf, execute transactions, or engage in any activity in your account. A trusted contact person must be 18 or older. They may be a family member, close friend, attorney, accountant, or another third party you believe would respect your privacy and be willing to help. So this goes back to, what if I don't have parents, I don't have children, I don't have a spouse, I don't have siblings? Yes, that happens. Millions of people. You still may be able to name a friend. You still may be able to name an attorney or an accountant or any other third party. So that might be important for you to know and help take away the fear of doing something like this. And it says, why would you add a trusted contact person, which I've kind of already mentioned? It's adding a trusted contact person to your account puts your brokerage firm in a better position to keep your account safe. In the event, for example, they can't reach you, a trusted contact person may help your firm ensure that your current address and contact information is correct. Let me go to that for a second. If, for example, they haven't been able to reach you, you know, firms have to have some kind of communication with their clients, customers regularly. That would be banks, brokerage firms, whatever it might be. Any kind of institution where you have some kind of a financial, you know, interest interaction, they need your information, because if they can't reach you over a period of time, your assets may get turned over to the state, and that becomes unclaimed property. They call that escheatment. So the property gets turned over to the state, and then you have to go through hoops to kind of recover it. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but that's one of the reasons why it might be important to have that trusted contact in case for some reason you move away and you completely forgot that you had this account. That trusted contact may be someone that we could touch base with and say, oh, they moved to California, didn't they tell you? No, they moved in such a rush, they were trying to get out of town, whatever it might be. another reason the trusted contact, if your brokerage firm suspects that you're experiencing a health issue, a trusted contact person may help your investment professional protect your account assets. So again, health issue could be some limited, you know, capacity if you're kind of maybe experiencing some dementia or something like that. You want to do this before you get to that point. A trusted contact person may help your brokerage firm verify the identity of any legal guardian, executor, trustee, or holder of a power of attorney on your account. And what authority does a trusted contact have on your account? Naming someone a trusted contact person only allows your brokerage firm in limited circumstances to contact that person to discuss certain information about your account. Naming someone a trusted contact person on your account does not give that person any authority to learn about your account balance, execute trades, or engage in any other transactions in your account, does not give that person any authority to make decisions about your account, does not make that person a power of attorney, legal guardian, trustee, or executor. How can an trusted contact person be added to your brokerage account? Brokerage firms may ask you to add a trusted contact person when you open up a new account or when you access your existing brokerage account. Many brokerage firms send notices to you via email or regular mail that include instructions for adding a trusted contact person to an account. Before clicking on any link in an email notice about a trusted contact person, make sure you verify that your brokerage firm sent the email. You know what? Just call your broker. You don't have to do it through email. Just contact them. And then if you'd like to add them, contact your firm or your investment professional at any time and ask how to add a trusted contact person. All right. All of this information is on FINRA.org. If any of you have never been on FINRA.org, it's a great resource for investors, for investment professionals, for anybody who wants more information about learning about investing and information such as this to protect, you know, the consumers. All right. So that's trusted contact. And, you know, initially your advisor may have asked you that, you know, back when you set up the firm a long time ago, but they may not keep asking you. And sometimes they wait until you're 65 to ask you. It doesn't mean you have to wait until you're 65. Maybe you want to do it a little sooner, particularly if you are someone who, you know, might not have, you know, other family members that could kind of watch out for things. All right. So that's trusted contact. Now, some of the other things we could do before we, you know, leave this earth is to try to get our things in order. As I had mentioned at the top of the show about the author, I'm going to mention again in case we have new listeners, Margareta Magnusson, author of The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, where she encourages people to get rid of unneeded, unwanted things. You can also do a cleanup, not just of your physical things, but of your financial assets. So what I try to watch out for when I'm doing tax returns, because I've said a tax return tells a story. You learn a lot about people when you do tax returns. But one of the things I look for is how can we be a little bit more efficient when I see perhaps some clients who've lost a spouse who has joint accounts with that spouse, and now we are a survivor and the surviving spouse can still hold those same accounts like they are if they want, but it really makes sense usually within a year to get the deceased spouse name off the accounts. So typically, and now we don't usually see this with like real estate, but definitely with financial accounts, particularly if the deceased spouse was the one who was named first, because that means all of that income is getting reported in their social security number. So if it's reported in social security number 123456789, and it really should be 9876, because now I'm the surviving spouse, it really makes sense to get that transferred, you know, while you're alive, and you might still have death certificates for that deceased spouse to make it easier for anybody who might be inheriting, because it could end up being a little bit of a nightmare to kind of get things out of joint names of two people who have passed away. So we're cleaning up things, but we also have to clean up our financial accounts. I'm going to give some more examples of those when I come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about final wishes and goodbyes, tips to help. And I'll get into more of the, you know, harder things in a little bit here. This is the easy things. This is why we're alive right now. So the joint accounts, if we have a spouse and the one spouse has passed away, sometimes I might be the primary taxpayer on that account. I might be the primary social security number. And if my spouse passes away, it's still in my social security number. That's not as complicated. But if my husband's the primary one on the account and he passes away, now I'm getting that tax reporting in his social security number. But now I'm a single filer reporting a tax return in my social security number. It's a bit of a pain. It could be complicated then if your heirs now have to inherit, because now they have to prove both of you passed away. So it's just easier to try to get this done. I see it over and over, and I don't know if it's because people are in denial when they lose a spouse, very sad, it's traumatizing, and they just can't move forward. But I've seen so many tax documents still in the deceased spouse's, you know, primary social security number. Now, for tax purposes, if you do run into this, there are things we can do. It's called nominee. You can nominee the income to, you know, yourself. You could say nominee from husband's social security number who's been gone for 5 years to my social security number, because you're still going to be responsible for reporting the income because you're getting it. So you want to, you know, get that cleaned up a little bit. That nominee stuff is just a bit of a, you know, hassle. So get any assets that are in the deceased spouse's name, if it was joint with you, in your own name. It might take a death certificate, a letter of instruction, you know, some paperwork, but you can get that done. The other thing we often see is someone might have individual stock with transfer agents. You've heard of places like ComputerShare or Equiniti, you know, different transfer agents who manage the stock for, you know, major corporations. So you hold it in like street name and you get a quarterly check perhaps of dividends. You get a little statement and it shows that perhaps you're reinvesting the dividends, or maybe you get the dividend check, but you'll get like a little announcement every quarter. And perhaps you have stock like that in whether it's individual or joint names, but it's individually held. You're holding it in with these transfer agents, not at a brokerage firm. So you get like 10 different 1099s. But you also have a joint brokerage account at the investment firm. Well, if you have joint all of these little separate investments with the transfer agents, and you have a joint account with your brokerage firm, you could just move it over there into your joint account. But then you might say, well, gosh, Lori, you know, I'm going to hold these forever. I'm not going to ever sell these. I don't need to put them in joint account. I don't want to pay an investment advisor money to manage assets I don't plan to sell. Well, then you have a conversation with your financial professional and say, hey, you know, I have all these positions. Can you help me move them into an unmanaged account or a non-managed account where I can have them joint? And if anything happens to me, everything's all in one place. One of the things that I see has happened with some people as they get older, they stop opening the mail, they don't cash the checks, they pile up, and then they get turned over to the state. As I mentioned, they escheat to the state, and now we have unclaimed property with the state because someone never cashed the checks. Then if you're never cashing the checks, then that transfer agent may think, wait, they're never cashing the checks. They're not doing anything. I've lost touch with them. And now the law tells me I have to turn over these assets to the state. And then guess what? The state doesn't have that stock anymore. It's cash. They're going to send you a check. It's not like they're holding those certificates for you. So it could, you know, kind of impair how you might have handled, you know, some of the assets or, you know, cash that you would have been entitled to. Maybe bank balances, could be refund checks, it could be insurance proceeds, it could be any type of financial, you know, instrument or, you know, asset that could get turned over if that custodian or that bank or that institution could not contact you. So that would become unclaimed property. So rather than do that, kind of put it all maybe in one place so you don't miss out on those checks or cashing the checks or miss out on mergers or acquisitions. And it just seems to go a lot smoother when it's kind of all in one place. And then watch out for that titling, that asset titling. So back to, again, final wishes and goodbyes and tips to helps, then that helps. So we're cleaning up our personal property. We're also cleaning up our financial accounts. You also might want to make sure you have your asset titling properly done. I have seen also too many times where I might have a married couple and one has a, you know, a bank account with $100,000 in it and everything else is joint. Well, if it's in your name alone, then that becomes probate. And now you your surviving spouse, if it's a surviving spouse, has to go through the probate process, pay a lawyer and, you know, go through the probate court and get short certificates to simply close out a bank account that maybe, you know, you guys were using for your expenses. And all of a sudden you can't get access to it because it was in your other spouse's name. So watch out for that. You to make it sometimes easier. So I do have situations where someone might want to keep their assets in their name alone. Maybe it's a second marriage, a third marriage, or, you know, and you have other children from another marriage and you have your reasons for wanting to keep those assets separate, or you've been through a bad divorce and you just want to make sure you always have some kind of independent access to assets for whatever reason. If you can still make it easier for your survivors, your heirs, whether it's a surviving spouse or children or something like that, by putting on an asset titling, a beneficiary designation on those accounts as well. So that also could help make it a little bit easier. Either if not joint, you could always add a transfer on death designation, beneficiary designation, that type of thing. So that's another way you can make it easier, and you can review all of this with your lawyer, but it would be really important to have a list of all your assets and know what you have and what you want to happen to those assets, so that you can set it up in such a way that the assets will pass the way that you want in the easiest of ways possible. So remember I said, what if you weren't paying attention, you kind of lost track of all of these little stock things that you had? It could go to unclaimed property. Now, let me tell you something about unclaimed property. It's so easy to get if you have unclaimed property, and so easy to check. Like, I had someone once tell me they paid money to get unclaimed property. Frankly, you should never have to pay to get unclaimed property if everything was valid. So you can go on any of the state websites. So typically what I do, I will Google, you know, Pennsylvania unclaimed property, and I get the link that goes directly to the Pennsylvania state site. Michigan unclaimed property, go directly to the Michigan state site. Any state in the country, you type in the state unclaimed property and you go to the state's website for unclaimed property. You would be surprised about how much you might find there. Now, I will tell you that I have clients that I can tell are so buttoned up, it's ridiculous. If I ever check for them for unclaimed property, they never have it. But then I have those clients who, you know, whoops, missed this, forgot that, oops, you know, that maybe not as, you know, diligent in checking their finances. And quite often I have found unclaimed property for people. So it's something kind of fun to do. You can check for your neighbors. You can check for anybody. Now, granted, I never click the claim button because I don't want anyone to think I'm ever trying to claim any kind of property that doesn't belong to me. But it is a good way for us to find out if we have clients who might have lost some money. So unclaimed property before you pass away. Unclaimed property, definitely, if you have a loved one who's passed away, you want to check on that. And typically, I will check in any number of states they may have lived. So I have lived in Pennsylvania, and I have lived in Michigan. I have family who've lived in Utah, in Ohio, Washington. So you can check all of the different states for unclaimed property. You know, something else that, you know, I do want to mention, and I'm always careful as the show is for educational purposes, but, you know, something to think about if you don't work with a financial advisor currently, you may want to think about working with a financial advisor. I always like to say, you know, it's the questions you don't know to ask that could be important. And it is nice to kind of know that there's someone watching out for you. I mean, you know, financial advisors can help kind of go to the distance in keeping an eye on things for you. If they suspect something is suspicious, they can call you, they can do the trusted contact. So it's kind of nice to have a little bit of a relationship perhaps with a financial advisor if you don't have anyone else in your life. So what I like to say, or what I have seen quite often, is perhaps a couple coming in, and it may not be for both spouses, but there may be a non-financial spouse. So in these circumstances, when I talk about, you know, final wishes and goodbyes and tips to help, if you feel like, what if something happens to me, who is going to help my non-financial spouse with those kind of financial questions that may come up, or financial oversight? So working with either a financial advisor, you know, making sure you have a CPA or an attorney to kind of help in those circumstances can be really comforting to any surviving spouse who may not, you know, have the financial acumen or interest. You know, sometimes it's not that they couldn't understand, it's that they just don't have the interest. So I have often seen where a couple will come in and say, I'm really doing this for my spouse. And it could be, you know, any spouse. It doesn't matter who it is. All right. So now let's talk about maybe a little bit of the harder thing. So you heard me mention the unclaimed property, that we could look at that during life, but it also might be something we want to check if someone passes away. So whenever I do have a client pass away, I always check unclaimed property, and I'll let the family know, hey, there might be some unclaimed property out there. I don't know if estate attorneys automatically check for that. That's where I learned this. I worked at a law firm for 9 years, and we always checked for unclaimed property. So I don't know if it's a matter of fact that all attorneys do that with helping with estate administration, but you may not hire an attorney. You may be doing it on your own. So that would certainly be a step I would take to check for unclaimed property. But what are some of the other things we can do as we're preparing kind of for those final days? We talk about pre-planning, funeral planning with our clients. We say, have you pre-planned your funeral? Pre-planning your funeral doesn't mean you've necessarily prepaid your funeral. So some people can do prepay, where you pay now for a funeral. You might not die for 10 years, but you may enter into a contract with a funeral home that you're going to prepay it today. And, you know, the cost will be good, you know, even if you pass away in 10 years. So there's prepay, but there's pre-plan. And I think most funeral homes nowadays will have a website that you can go on. If there's a particular funeral home that you like, you've been to friends' services and you liked a particular one, you drive by one, you like the way it looks, whatever it might be that draws you to a particular funeral home, you can go on their website and kind of see what information is there that might be helpful to you in moving forward with doing some pre-planning. And I'll talk more about that after this next break. The phone number here, if you have questions, is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking tonight about final wishes and goodbyes. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810 and also through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. So pre-planning for your funeral or prepaying could be either. Again, we're still alive at this point. Hopefully pre-planning, that's pre-planning. If you have to leave it to your family, you know, maybe you don't care because you're gone. But generally, you know, you try to honor someone's wishes. And sometimes there's people who want big, fancy caskets. Some people just want to be cremated. Some people don't want anything. Some people want services. Some people don't. Typically, your funeral director will help talk you through all of that and, you know, make sure that they've documented your wishes. So, you know, think about that. Some people will say, oh, my life insurance is to pay for my funeral. Well, you know, I don't know if it has to be or not. But, you know, if you think you want something big and fancy, you might need life insurance to pay for it. I say go cheap. But anyway, let's say now someone has passed away. Usually you're going to you know, contact the attorney. If there's a will, you need to find the will. You need to understand where the assets are. Is there a list of assets? Hopefully you've given, you know, you've laid out somewhere where you have your websites and passwords for any of your financial information, particularly for people who do everything online nowadays. You can't open a file cabinet drawer to find those statements from, you know, XYZ custodian. It's all online. So you want to make sure that it's somewhere. Same thing, like I would typically look at a tax return to kind of see where are the assets and what are the assets and what can we find. We call it marshaling the assets when someone passes away. Where do we find them? Tax return is a great place to start. But guess what? People also are doing all their tax returns online, too, and may or may not have a printed copy somewhere. So you kind of have to have some notes somewhere for someone to be able to know where they start. Where do they go for all of these things? But the tax return is a great place. Another place to look is a checkbook. Okay, now how many people have checkbooks even today? If you have a checkbook, you know, where is it? Where is it kept? Is it in your purse? Is it in the cabinet? Is it in your office? That checkbook will also give a lot of information as far as if there's deposits recorded or if there's expenses recorded. That could tell you things like, oh, here's a dividend check that was deposited. That means they might have stock. Or there might be a check written to an insurance company. Oh, what kind of insurance was that? Was it homeowner's insurance? Was it auto insurance? Or was it life insurance? Was it disability insurance? What kind of activity do we see in that checkbook? But again, that could be a written checkbook. But most people, a lot of people could be doing this all online again, which is why it's just critical, critical, critical. If you are doing everything online, that you have this stuff written down somewhere. And even when you're changing passwords, you may forget to update that master document that has maybe all those websites and those user IDs and those passwords. And nowadays, you actually need to include or should include in your will and or your power of attorney information that your agent, your executor, your representative can access all of that information. So, you know, you really need to kind of cross your T's and dot your I's on some of this, you know, technology access, etc. Some people have asked, Lori, what happens about like credit bureaus? If someone dies, should we contact a credit bureau? I believe that the funeral home typically will contact, for example, Social Security. And then I think Social Security just like puts out some kind of information blast. I know when my brother-in-law passed away many years ago, we got notices from his credit card companies that they were notified that he had passed away. And at the time, we had not notified them. So we knew it had to have come from probably Social Security. So they may or may not put that out, but it could be something you might want to do where you could notify the credit bureau. Experian had something on their website, experian.com, about, you know, a family member recently passing away, and that they say it is a good idea to report the death to Experian and other national credit bureaus. Reporting the death can limit criminals' ability to use your loved one's personal information to commit identity theft. And then they say how to properly report it, that you need I believe a death certificate. It says how to report the death of a relative to the credit bureau. Experian and other credit reporting agencies like TransUnion and Equifax are typically notified of a death by the Social Security Administration or the deceased person's creditors. But to speed up the process and protect your loved one's identity, it's recommended that you notify the credit agencies as quickly as possible. Keep in mind that only a spouse or other legally authorized person, such as the executor of an estate, can report a death to the bureaus. So here's how to do it. Obtain a copy of the death certificate. If do not provide the original, instead obtain a certified copy if you don't already have one. And then you would contact Vital Records, Office of the State where the death occurred, for that. Gather the information you need, the name of the deceased, Social Security number, date of birth, date of death, and then contact the credit bureau, et cetera. And then you can mail a copy of the death certificate. So I think that in some circumstances, you know, some people might think of that. And if not, I feel like the Social Security Administrator, the funeral director who notifies the Social Security Administration, typically then the Social Security Administration takes care of it. That's the backup. But what the credit agencies suggest is if you want to speed up that process, you can notify them directly as well. You also want to check then, as I mentioned, for the final tax return to look for assets if needed. Sometimes what will happen is you will have expenses that you have to pay for that loved one who's passed away. And again, these are tips for final wishes and goodbyes, things to help. And it's really to help the survivor sometimes too, that if there are bills to pay, how are they going to pay them? And is there money available? You want to be careful with this and make sure that you talk to an attorney first, because there could be circumstances where your deceased loved one or family member or friend or relative that you may have been engaged to be the personal representative, they may not have assets to pay debts perhaps that they have. So it would be really important to speak with an attorney, particularly if you have those circumstances, because if it ends up being what might be a bankrupt estate, there is a, you know, a pecking order for which creditors get paid first. So you can't just go randomly start paying off, for example, like a credit card if they have a legal bill or if they owe the IRS, because the IRS and the attorney are going to get paid before the credit card. I'm not an attorney, but this is just basic. So just be careful of acting too quickly. Sometimes I see people act too quickly, and sometimes I see people like never finish estates. They just drag out and don't distribute the assets. And that can be more of a nightmare, because now you're opening yourself up to any number of circumstances that can further complicate it. Like, for example, if there's heirs that could also be old and on their deathbed, and now, oh, my deceased loved one died and they had in their will that it was, you know, some of the money was going to go to this, you know, friend or relative, and now they've died and now they have three kids and we can't find them. And it could just really complicate things. So review your estate documents, review your assets, review your asset titling. If there's going to be an executor, are there assets that they actually have to probate that they can use to pay the bills? If you make everything non-probate, then there is technically no estate. There is no executor then. And in that circumstance, who's paying the bills? Who is filing the inheritance tax return, if there is one, depending on what state you live in? Who is taking care of, you know, selling? Well, you might not have a house in that circumstance if there's no probate assets. But who's going to be responsible for kind of like, you know, tying up the loose ends for you? So you want to kind of follow the threads. That's a phrase I like using in my financial life, my financial world, and with my clients. If you have a circumstance, let's follow the threads. Let's follow it through. If so-and-so is going to inherit, how are they going to inherit? What kind of tax bracket are they in? Are they responsible? Do I need to set up a trust? I didn't even talk about trust, but that might be something too that you might want to think about when we say tips to help for final wishes and goodbyes. Maybe there is a family member that you love that maybe have some incapacity. Maybe they have some special needs. You might want to talk to an attorney about what could you do to help that person. Typically, it could be a trust that you might have to appoint a corporate trustee if there's no family member that you can count on. And they could manage that then for that, you know, special beneficiary that you may want to help. I mentioned looking through the checkbook to look for bills that someone might be paying. And one of those I mentioned was insurance. If someone is paying for an insurance policy, is it life insurance? Now, that is one way to get money sometimes quite quickly. I've always been astonished at how fast the life insurance companies pay out claims. So if you know that there's a life insurance policy, and again, this is, you know, a tip for us while we're still alive, if we do have life insurance and we've been paying on it and we know it's a valid, you know, policy that if we die, someone can make a death claim on it. What is the name of the insurance company? Where is the policy? What's the policy number? And who are the beneficiaries? I also always recommend not only having primary beneficiaries, but having contingent beneficiaries, meaning if something happens to my primary beneficiary, who would be next in line? You, who owns the asset or controls the asset, is the one who gets to say who gets it next. I love the power of disclaimers. When someone passes away, someone's inheriting, they might not need it. They can say, I don't want it. If they don't want it, it doesn't mean they get to decide who it goes to. You still get to decide who it goes to. So this is control from the grave. I love control from the grave. It's called disclaimers. So I could say, hey, I want this asset to go to my child. Well, this could be 30 years from now. My child could be super, super wealthy and have, you know, five kids. Well, then my child could say, I don't want it. I don't need that asset. Well, they don't get to decide who it goes to. But if I set in my will or I set on my beneficiary designation to my child, and if not my child, per stirpes, to their children, if my child disclaims it and they can say, I don't want all of it, or I don't want part of it, I don't want a percent of it, I don't want this much of the dollars of it, they can decide how much they're disclaiming of that asset within a certain period of time, filling out a particular wording for that disclaimer. They say they don't want it. Whatever part they disclaim then would go, in my story here, to their children. Okay? So disclaimers are, primary and contingent beneficiary designations are super, super important, super flexible in estate planning and what we call post-mortem planning, control from the grave, post-mortem planning. So those are all some tips. So helping with, I'm going to give you a quick recap if I can here. The New York Times article was, I think, was it March of 26? The author was Margarita Magnusson, and she was the author of The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, talking about getting rid of things we don't need and maybe having a throwaway box. I thought that was a great idea. Align your financial assets. review your asset titling, review your beneficiary designations, primary and contingent. Make sure you have emergency contact information on your phone, on your refrigerator, in your address book. Make sure that you've documented your websites that you use for your financial information or even for bill pay, online bill paying, bank information, websites, passwords, and make sure you know where your documents are. Next week, I'm going to have Chris Holland and potentially Bill Henderson to talk about the first quarter market review and some give you some historical perspectives as well as we navigate these recent turbulent times. Thank you, Bob and Cindy. Thank you, James. Thank you, listeners. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.